Okay, at this moment, 19 years ago, we were all in shock, right? I mean, let that sink in for a moment. We were all in shock. We were all wondering how bad the destruction would be and how many lives would be lost. Honestly, it does not feel like 19 years. In fact, in many ways, it feels like the wound is still fresh.
Live from the forefront of the weekly infopocalypse via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney all lined up to join us. And right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, somber open there this morning, but I think it's needed on a day like today. Hard to believe. Do you remember what you were doing?
I do. I was out shoeing horses early in the morning, and came back to the house to get some breakfast, to sort of reset my gear a little bit. I didn't have appointments till later on in the afternoon. I checked my answering machine, because back in those days we had answering machines. And my mother-in-law had called, and the message simply said, "Oh my gosh, are you seeing this? This is insane. I hope you guys are okay."
Right.
And I flipped on the TV, and there it was.
Yeah, I was sitting in the Pro Farmer office, and honestly, I was just getting ready to head out the door, and we were going to do study groups, I guess, with we were considering a new product at that time, and we were getting a group of Pro Farmer members together so that we could evaluate our idea with them. And obviously we put that on hold, but I remember it just clear as a bell. At the time, Jeff Pence out of our Indiana office was the president of Pro Farmer, and he was with us in Cedar Falls, and we just kind of sat and watched and started to formulate how we would respond. And we got Wiesmeyer on the phone with us, and it all started to come together very quickly. We, you know, as a journalist, you got to switch gears very quickly from that shock and awe to it's time to report and time to put perspective on this. So, we didn't have much time for the shock before we got back into the reporting, but it was still one of my the issue that we put out that week was still one of my proudest issues that we put out. So, yeah. Okay, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, economists polled by the Wall Street Journal expect annualized third quarter GDP growth of 23.9%. That's up from the prior survey's 18.3%. Those economists foresee quicker labor market improvement, but remain concerned over consumer spending, given the end of the added federal government unemployment dollars that was clear back at the end of July. While there have been hints at resumed government aid for the unemployed Americans, legislators remain deadlocked on the amount and duration of the program. And we'll get to that deadlock in a moment. But, Chip?
No, why don't you jump right into it? Because I think your next item does fit really well with it, obviously.
Well, yeah, speaking of deadlock, the Senate voted yesterday on the scaled-down version of the coronavirus aid bill and failed to achieve the 60-vote majority needed for passage. 52 of 53 Senate Republicans voted in favor of the measure, with Rand Paul from Kentucky posting a no vote. This is interesting, saying he does not wish that and therefore would not vote in favor of the bill. Now, despite most Republicans voting in favor, it is now believed that vulnerable Republican senators up for re-election in November may struggle at the polls. Senator Marco Rubio speculated, quote, "I think Democrats decided that if things go bad, that the president and Republicans will be blamed, and it will help them win in November," suggesting there may not be a resolution on this before the election. Dandy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The reason that Rand Paul, Davis, you cut out just for a moment. The reason that Rand Paul said that he voted against it was because he doesn't want to add to the national debt. You described it as a scaled down version. It's been described as a skinny. I will remind everyone that on Wednesday morning, Senator Grassley was very quick to correct me and said it is targeted. It is a targeted package that they were putting forward. I think that if you look at it as a targeted package rather than a scaled down or a skinny version of the bill,
sure,
then you need to give it more attention than what it received.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. A possible USMCA row is brewing as some high-level officials in Mexico suggest President Obrador is considering a request to halt imports of U.S. biotech corn. If acted on, this will be a major issue relative to USMCA implementation and sure to get the attention of farm groups and farm state lawmakers. Mexico's president recently announced the resignation of his environment minister nearly a month after a leaked recording showed that the cabinet member criticized the president's administration. López Obrador said Wednesday that the Environment and Natural Resources Secretary had been considering quitting even before the leaked recording, which clearly showed he was unhappy with the administration's direction on environmental issues. Is this an issue on GMO corn? Am I reading this right?
I think we're going to get into that in the conversation a bit later because I know Jim has been working on that story. Yeah.
Good, good. Well, finally here, gasoline demand in the United States was 18% below the same time last year in 2020. But despite an encouraging increase in demand through the summer, the last week of August saw a 1.9% decline in consumption from the week prior. IHS market chairman said, quote, "The plateauing in demand is a symptom of the continuing aggressiveness of the coronavirus and is telling us that it will take longer to get back to normal than expected." Chip.
All right. All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Shike. She's got a huge story that has had a big impact on this hog market the last couple of days. How you doing, Jennifer?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Doing just great. Just great. ASF and a dead wild hog inside the German border has had a big impact on our markets.
Sure has. I mean, I think Germany's been waiting for this. They've known it's close. It's been knocking on their door for a long time. And so, you know, give them credit. They're doing what they can to try to push this regionalization and trying to keep trade going. But, you know, we've seen South Korea come in and say that they're going to halt any exports from Germany. And I don't know. I won't be surprised if China and Japan make announcements soon as well. What do you think?
I think you're exactly right, because that's kind of been the SOP, the standard operating procedure of those importing countries. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the amount of pork that China has been bringing in from Germany, this has the potential to stress our supply, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It really does. You know, I had a good conversation with Dermot Hayes yesterday, and he was saying that he's concerned if we can actually fill that entire gap here, you know, in the U.S. Because obviously, if they do stop exports from Germany, China is going to need more pork from somebody, and we would be in a good situation to be able to provide more. But do we have enough? He said it's questionable because we've switched back from sending, you know, one plant, sending carcasses to China, is now doing domestic production again. So
interesting.
It'll be interesting.
That's exactly right. But boy, more than $6 in the last 2 days up in lean hog futures. That's some much needed relief. We just need to get that strength in the futures over to the cash market. Then I think everybody'd feel a lot better. Jennifer, have a good weekend. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right, that's Jennifer Shike, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. We got the free-for-all coming your way next.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Corteva for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Hey, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We're going to get this free-for-all started here in just a moment. You can get 24/7 access to all of the great content from Farm Journal Field Days at agweb.com/fielddaysondemand, and it's free. The best of Farm Journal Field Days is brought to you by Climate Field View platform and the new hashtag Growing Ahead initiative sponsored by Bayer. Find Field View on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube for more tips and support virtually. All right, let's get it started. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. How are you this morning, Jim?
Pretty good, Chip. Busy day, as we all know.
That's right. 19 years ago, we were challenged to put together a newsletter and try to put perspective on it. Every year on September 11th, I go back and I look at that issue, and it was pretty good.
Absolutely. It's one you'll never forget in your whole lifetime. I remember I was going into D.C. at the time, heard on the radio the first plane, you know, going, hitting the building and turning right around saying that was no accident. And then when I got into the house, I visibly saw the second plane, and it was all hands on deck from then on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Pam, what were you doing September 11th? Pam Johnson, Iowa Farmer.
I was outside working and just happened to come in, and I can't remember how, but heard from somebody who said, turn your TV on. Mm-hmm. And from then on, I was just mesmerized and didn't get up for hours watching.
Yeah. And Haney, I mean, it captured everybody's attention.
Oh, absolutely. I have an aunt and uncle that live in Manhattan. So at the time, you know, when I saw the first plane hit, I was at the university. I was in university. I was working out at the gym, and it was on the TV. And you know, you first think it's what's going on here, like crazy pilot, like what a terrible accident. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the second plane hits, and the music drops in the gym, and everybody's focused on the TVs, and you're trying to get a hold of your relatives that live in Manhattan. It was you'll never forget it.
Yeah, that's right. That is correct. So there is just an incredible checklist of things that we need to get through here today. I'm going to kick it right off with the same thing that I started with Senator Grassley with on Wednesday morning, and that is the waivers, Jim, the gap year SRE requests. It sounds like they're going to be tossed out, right?
That's what it sounds like. And Colin Peterson, House Ag Committee Chairman, hit the nail on the head saying he wants proof now, not just undocumented sources. And White House continues to tell us, watch Trump's next trip to Iowa. But we do need to hear it from him because the trust factor is not there.
Exactly. I'm with you on that. I mean, I'm not only do I want to hear it from President Trump, Pam, I want to hear it from EPA Administrator Wheeler, too, that they are doing away with these waiver requests.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. And also, I want to hear it after the election, you know, because we've had these promises before and they've been broken and we've gone to bat with it over and over and over. So it would be wonderful if it's really true, but I'm still a skeptic.
Yeah. You know, I think the market is starting to accept that it is going to be true. As a matter of fact, if you look at the RIN market, the renewable identification number market, it reflected a belief in the reports almost immediately because the RIN value started to climb to the upside, which should be encouraging more blending out there. So I think there's some truth to it because of the way that RIN market is trading. So well, I hope it's true.
I'm asking what's going to be the reaction of the oil companies, and is it going to go all the way to the Supreme Court?
Well, Jim, aren't they asking for that?
Well, that usually is the case on any number of topics. But I clearly know that Trump focused on the politics of this as well. We were there well before that on this program, as you are well aware. And he cannot lose Iowa, and it's just so close, as well as the Senate race. I think this would also decide Senator Ernst race with Greenfield.
Yeah,
it's interesting, when you watch some of the political commentary at night and they talk about the states that are really the focus and in jeopardy or the true swing states. Iowa I don't think I saw it mentioned all week. How come it's not being picked up on?
I don't know, but they should be mentioning it as one of those states that I think is still up in the air.
Yes, and Arizona with 11 electoral votes, Minnesota with 10, and Iowa with 6. So those are critical areas there.
Yeah, Pam.
And I think I think it vacillates, right? I mean, every night you can watch the polls or you can listen in to what's happening, and it's like things are shifting all the time depending on what's happening in the day's news.
Yeah.
Was it Ted Cruz on Trump's list this week for possible Supreme Court mentions?
Yeah.
Is that sort of maybe some favor to maybe keep quiet about what he wants to do with biofuels and just sort of like here would be like that? Why was Ted Cruz on that list, first of all?
Probably some Republicans in the Senate would want him out of the Senate to be on the Supreme Court.
It's a way to get him out of the Senate.
You know, Sean, I saw that too, and it really raises a big red flag for me because the first question I asked was, where do you think biofuels is going to stand in all these court challenges if Ted Cruz, you know, Mr. Against Renewable Fuels, is on the Supreme Court?
Interesting. Okay. All right. So I think we make progress on the biofuels. I think we do move forward without those gap year waivers. And from that point, then it becomes, what to me was a fascinating conversation yesterday on the show with Scott Shelady from Ag Optimus Brokerage. And Scott is, he's kind of a commentator, not just on the markets, but on life and on social issues and everything. And we had what I felt was a pretty good conversation. And he was talking about the recovery of the economy and how, when you look at the decision making on the COVID response and who can open and who can't open, he went straight to the governors and said that that's where the decision making is really happening out there on this. Jim, do you agree with that?
Well, yes, I do. And Trump eventually came around to that. Remember that he knew that he didn't have that power, you know, to direct the states, and who better than the governors. The problem there is when you have adjoining states have far different policies, and you see that throughout the U.S. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Pam, I think we can take the decision making and the greatest influence even deeper. And I mean, it's not even mayors here in the state of Iowa. It's like school boards are having an influence over how the economy is going to recover.
Well, the Des Moines School District is suing the governor over her mandate because they don't feel it's safe to bring their kids back yet. They've got one of the highest rates of COVID there. So, you know, I got tested for COVID last week because I had symptoms of a summer cold and, got the results back the next day and I was negative. But it is raising its ugly head, and it's in our little tiny town school system here. And
oh, yeah.
So it's the debate about the unending debate about opening up or being cautious.
Yeah.
And all the hate on both sides that's in that argument. And yet when you look at the recommendations from the scientific community, it's pretty clear about that you should be cautious yet.
Oh, sure. Sure. I don't think there's any question that we should be cautious. But when you look at Iowa State and Story County here in Iowa, Story County went from being one of the hottest spots in the world when kids came back to school. This week we did the test on 143 athletes, and they all came back negative. They all came back negative.
Hey, Chip, like, there has to be balance. And I think the problem is, like, when I hear Trump say, like, open it up, like, let's go. I hear Biden say, like, let's hand it all the decision over to the scientists. You wouldn't hand your entire business over to your accountant. You have to have business across, or you have to have balance across all the functional areas of your operation.
Exactly.
We got to have balance on this issue.
That sounds like a comment that I made back in March. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us right now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, back at the start of the week on Tuesday, we made the comment that it felt like it was going to be a bean week on Chinese buys, and we had more again this morning.
Yeah, definitely, Chip. That's given us some support ahead of USDA's reports here this morning. But, you know, it just continues. We pulled back a little bit yesterday, just a pause in that extended uptrend that we've got going. And here we are again going this morning. So we'll see if it lasts through the reports and into the weekend.
Right. Well, you know, and those export sales of soybeans in the weekend of September 3rd, I think those surprised people too, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely monstrous. Way above what the expectations were at over almost 3.2 million tons. So, you know, that's given us some support as well. This, like you mentioned, the demand side of the market's really supportive right now. And we're looking for USDA to lower the crop estimate this morning. So,
yeah.
You know, both sides of that are pulling or favoring bulls at the moment.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. And you go over to the livestock trade, we've got a potential price positive demand shock going there too.
Yes, the hog market, you know, it finished limit up in most of the contracts yesterday, so we got expanded limits today. We aren't fully testing the expanded limits, but we're above what the old $3 limit was in the first two contracts this morning. And so some really positive price action there. And that's tied to the ASF in Germany and the potential for U.S. to pick up more export demand to China.
Right. Okay. Got the reports coming up. You said it. Trade's expecting some tighter supply side estimates. We'll find out here in a half an hour. Thanks, Beej. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to the free-for-all here on AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory, and I don't think I even did official introductions earlier. Pro Farmer policy analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Iowa Farmer, past president of NCGA, and Mazal Pam Johnson, and of course Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio, are on the panel again this Friday. So at the end of the last segment, Sean, you were making the comment about balance and that we need to bring some balance to it. And then during the break, I think I was still on the air when I said that back in March. And then during the break, we got into it real quick. I want to go over that just a little bit because it is so important, I think, to understand, Sean, that as we go forward, just because I'm for reopening schools and getting kids back to school does not mean that I'm not in favor of being cautious. I am very in favor of being cautious. You can have it both ways. It's just that yep. In this time of, like Pam said, this political headbutting, most people don't think you can have it both ways, but you can. You can, well, don't you think, Sean?
You can, but the trouble is that through this whole thing, everything is viewed through the political lens. And I think we saw so much of that in the president's comments to Bob Woodward. Like, you know, he confirmed what everyone's been sort of fearing is that, you know, of course I'm playing it down. And when he does act presidential, we use that against him too. Like it's just everything is so political on this topic.
Yeah.
It's look how Dr. Fauci has been used as a pawn back and forth, right? He's the enemy. According to some Republicans at one point a couple months ago. Then this week, he backs up Trump on how he's handled the virus, and all of a sudden he's a hero again to Republicans. Like, it's got to stop.
Yeah, it is pretty astounding to me, but it's tough to remove the political angle from it for most, isn't it, Pam?
Yeah, I think so too, and I think you guys are both so right. Is when did everything become so black and white? I don't care what issue it is. If you are an R or a D, you no longer can sit down and have agree to disagree on the issues. You just pull the lever, and so much hate out there on social media right now. And so, despite what's going on politically, you know, I think all of us can do better. I have Republican friends. I have Democratic friends. We don't fight. We talk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And why can't we get back to that kind of constructive criticism, discourse?
Because the people won't have it.
Agree.
If we get back to that, Pam, in the environment that we're in right now, and we will eventually get back to it, but I don't know if it's going to be in your lifetime or my lifetime, but we will eventually get back to it. I believe that the country's too. We will get back to it, but if you do it right now, your party. So, say I'm a Republican. If I go and start having a conversation with a Democrat, you. And we start to make sense to each other, and we start to come out and say, geez, you know, okay, well, let's get together and push this. My own party would jump on me and say, listen, you can't do that with Pam Johnson. She's a Democrat. Yeah. Don't
compromise,
do that.
Compromise is viewed as weakness.
Yes.
Right.
And if you did get together, you'd realize that neither party is talking to either of you. Both parties are talking to people that are way out on both sides of the spectrum. Yeah. And in the middle, there's all of these people that are centrist, that are reasonable, that quite frankly are trapped in this vortex of who the heck do I vote for?
Yeah. Yeah.
So agree,
Jim, jump
Sean.
In here.
Well, yeah, the middle of the road is roadkill, and I agree with you, Chip. I don't see any solution to this near term, and you saw it this week again with the book that Sean mentioned, Woodward. Pros and cons on that. It didn't fool anyone that Trump said. I don't think it's right that Trump did what he did, but Woodward used to be a beat reporter for Washington Post, so why didn't that leak to the Washington Post if it was going
it
to
so
save
long?
Lives? But then on the other hand, we have Biden. I think Mr. Biden really needs to sit in front of a real reporter or two and answer questions, because you saw vividly that he used a teleprompter in a virtual event with AFL-CIO. So get a Kelly O'Donnell, NBC News, a good report, still a good reporter, and maybe Brett Baer to answer questions without any teleprompters, because this thing's serious. Because if you're going to vote for Biden, you want him with all of his faculties.
Right. Right. You know, Jim, if President Trump would have told you or me or Haney what he told Woodward, all three of us would have rushed to the microphone as quick as we could have and said, hey, listen, this is what he said. And this is what he said while he's doing it.
Absolutely.
Okay? I wouldn't have sat on it and put it in a damn book so that I could sell it. I would have put it out.
Yes. And Woodward... Woodward did that with his other books when he had scoops. They showed up months before his book came out. So, I'm not attacking Woodward. He was and is a good reporter, writer. But, I think that he should have put this
I'm
out.
Doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Bob freaking Woodward.
Yes. He's one of the examples of that I've been trying to follow.
Yeah.
And now I find myself saying, damn it, Bob, why'd you do that?
I think everyone's been talking all week. Why did Trump talk to Bob Woodward for 18 hours on the phone? And this is Trump not listening to his handlers, because there is a lot. I've seen a lot on Fox News this week about how I would have told him not to do it. I did tell him not to do it. And it was Jared Kushner that was pushing him to do it. And he listened to Kushner, who he shouldn't
and
be listening
Lindsey
to.
And Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham. Also.
Exactly.
They're after Lindsey Graham now for recommending that he do that. But that's all well and good. But he should have told the American public.
What would
but
have you yet, done, Jim?
Trump can't come back and say he didn't want to rattle Americans, and then on the other side tell Americans that if Biden wins, there'll be chaos in the country. It just doesn't add up.
Exactly. Yeah, the messages don't add up.
No.
I get that. But on the coronavirus thing, I understand. When I think about what would have I done in that situation, I would have said, listen, this is a very serious situation, but we have to understand that we just can't run out in the streets and panic over all of this, blah, blah, blah. And I would have tried, I would have had the people in the room with me trying to figure out how to construct the balance that I felt was needed at the time so that we could keep the economy moving forward while getting this virus under control. I would have had a room full of people immediately trying to get that figured out.
It's called gravitas, that he should have met the condition at the time and spoke the truth to Americans, and he held it off.
Yep, Pam, well, I heard a sigh.
And I think now we're passing the buck. We're giving him a pass once again, and we're blaming Biden, and we're blaming Jared Kushner, and we're blaming Lindsey Graham, when clearly the only person to blame is President Trump. And so back to the discussion about black and white and political discussion, you know, I would like to think there are so many things we have no control over. This is one of them. What we can control is our own discourse, and that's why I find it so valuable to be on this show every Friday, is because I think we're a teeny tiny model of what could and should happen.
Well, that's what we're trying to do, Pam. And yes, I agree with you, and I appreciate those comments very much. It's like I said last week, when I get a chance to listen to the Free For All, it strikes me how good of a conversation it can be. Okay, last call on this because we got to move on. Okay, we're going to move on now. I paused long enough. CFAP 2, Jim, what's going on?
Well, it either will be announced today, the details, or I've been told Monday. They must want to hold off, some people on Monday for whatever reasons. And if our sources are correct at ProFarmer, I think they're going to make a good move. If announced, they're going to move it to a revenue loss program rather than a price, determination. And that's rock solid because that will pass most, sensible tests, Chip.
Okay.
And there's plenty of funding available, even with Congress in a stalemate right now, through the Commodity Credit Corporation. And the White House has already asked in the coming continuing resolution to help fund the government past October 1, actually into December, December 18th, I've been told. And that will replenish the CCC up to the $30 billion level. So USDA will have the wherewithal in order to come up with a good CFAP 2 program, including 2020 crops, Jim.
Is ag running up against any resistance on more funding when you've got the restaurant industry, airline, just, clearly in a lot more trouble? Is there any resistance to more ag funding?
I don't see it here. Not in D.C. I just don't. And usually I know. Yeah. Oh, you do. Yeah. See, what usually you say food is a strategic product. And if you want a relatively cheap food policy, you get it one way or the other, through at the supermarket or at the income transfers to American farmers. And we've chosen the second.
It's only taken me like decades to get Jim Wiesmeyer to say that right there. The consumer has to pay for it one way or the other. You either pay for it collectively or individually. And that's the bottom line. Pam, real quick.
No doubt. Farmers need help right now. Ag needs help, but so do a lot of other sectors, per Sean's point. And I heard it during DeRacho comments in papers and on the radio is, yes, our farmers need it, but what about the rest of us? What about the other 99% in Iowa? Yes, we have to justify the payments, and that's why I'm so sad that the other package didn't make it through Congress.
There's more coming. There is more coming here eventually. We'll be back. We'll wrap it up next.
Show how you farm on by purchasing name brand merchandise from Farm Journal and Cowpokes Work at Western. Visit cowpokesonline.com right now, and $2 of every item purchased will be donated to 4-H.
Okay, we're about 10 minutes away from USDA's crop production supply and demand reports. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. It's a free-for-all. Pam Johnson, Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney. In the crop production report, the average trade guess on the corn yield, national average corn yield, 178.3 bushels per acre, down from 181.8 bushels per acre in the USDA August report. That would take the crop down to 14.9 billion bushels, down from 15.3. I'm just rounding there. 15.3 billion bushels from USDA in August. on the soybeans for the national average yield, 51.8 bushels per acre, down from 53.3 bushels per acre in August. In August, USDA put the bean crop at 4.425 billion bushels. The trade is looking for 4.295 billion bushels. So taking some out of the supply side. Pam, how'd your crops do at the end of the season? Kind of a tough end, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week. You know, the drought has taken the top end off of a lot of people, and that horrible heat, the week of heat we had with no rain.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's pretty tough. The one thing that, you know, there's so much attention being paid to the production report, and I get it. It's USDA's first look into the field on their own with the objective yield sampling. But we also get the supply and demand report, and we've got some demand issues that are going on right now, Jim, on corn and on soybeans. My gosh.
Yes, especially on corn. Whatever they come out with total China corn imports, Chip, it's too low.
Right.
I've had China watchers for decades, and now they're coming to an agreement that China is going to be a very large corn importer.
Yeah,
and that's good news if it's true for U.S. corn.
You know, and they had that cyclone blow through the northern China where they grow a lot of corn, and it just got, like, hardly any attention, Jim. But,
yes.
I mean, it's millions of – there's a lot of production that looks like East Central Iowa just blown over.
It does. And this is not just for phase one purposes. They need the corn. Relative to their production declines and also their rising hog production.
Yeah, right.
So and what about all the wild cards, guys? I mean, even American swine fever in Germany now, and so domestic demand. What could happen with that? It's just like when you think you get stuff figured out, it's like a guessing game again.
That's right. That is exactly right. I think that isn't that one of the official descriptions of life?
Yep. Life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans.
Exactly.
My father, you know, literally on his deathbed, had me come over and whispered in my ear, "Remember that scratch on your car? It's not worth it. It's not worth it worrying about." And that made an impression on me.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. What's the situation on corn into Mexico, Jim?
It has to do both internal politics, as we said in the news portion, you know, from Davis, and a push by the environmentalists there. I think that they'll be talked out of it myself, Chip, because of I think it could be high level calls from the U.S., either Lighthizer or even Trump himself. This would not be good for the implementation of USMCA because they would point the fingers legitimately so on Mexico, saying you're not fulfilling the spirit and the terms of the USMCA. So let's hope this blows over, but this tells you that you can never rest assured, relative to trade policy.
And this isn't the first time that Mexico has made this threat. Like, I was going through some news stories this morning, going back to like 2016 and 17. So this is kind of one of their go-tos.
Yes. Well, it's like country of origin labeling. It comes up every so often.
Yeah. And it's coming up again. It's going to country of origin labeling is going to be pushed once again, and I think, Jim, they're gonna have to take another look at country of origin labeling because the grassroots push on it is very strong again,
and some consumer push as well.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
So they're gonna have to take another. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No,
and also the big concern about farmer access to crop protection products, the huge pushback about Roundup, and what's the next chemical to fall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the country of origin labeling, the issue isn't the country of origin labeling. The issue is the M part of that. It's the mandatory country of origin labeling that creates so much of the problem. And if it had such a benefit, you can voluntarily do it now. And so go ahead and go for it. The market, it's a free market, and have at it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, Jim. So what are your, I always love asking, you know, crop questions of our Washington guy because he's got more opinions than what he let on normally on this. So tell me, what are we going to see when we get these reports here in a few minutes?
Soybeans could be the sleeper because I think the weather impacted soybeans negatively.
Yeah, but I think we need to wait a month for that.
Absolutely. But it's realizing market there.
Yeah, the process, I've talked about it. The process, I think, makes soybean, the soybean yield number, it makes it the wild card number in this. If it is recognized very quickly, but this being the first time that the enumerators are in the field taking a look, they're going to see a really good pod set at the end of August.
And it's going to be USDA on corn acreage, Chip. You know, on the corn acres, will they adequately assess the impact of the DIB ratio across to Iowa, Illinois, and other states?
Well, hopefully asking the question on the harvested acres. The problem is, I mean, a guy could have flat fields out there, and he still doesn't know if he's going to be able to get out there and get after them or not. So they're going to have to keep asking the question in Iowa, no question. What you doing this week, Haney?
Oh, just
next week.
Harvest continues here. We're looking at a record soybean yield potentially coming up in Ontario that people are really excited about. 53 bushels.
How much damage over there in the west from the freeze?
Limited. Where the coldest temperatures were is where a lot of the harvest has progressed in the southern part. So I think it's going to be less than we thought.
Pam, you going to be getting harvest started here pretty quick?
Getting all the equipment ready and getting ready to roll, but it's a ways off yet. 2 inches of rain now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You guys have a great day. Pro Farmers Jim Wiesmeyer, Pam Johnson, Iowa Farmer, Real Agriculture, Sean Haney. Got to come back this afternoon, you guys. I've got Rick Brock from Brock & Associates right here on AgriTalk.